Hey, thank you everyone for coming to this class, A Time to Write. And I'm enjoying getting to visit with some of you before class time about what you're interested in, and I say this with full honesty, I believe that many of you can talk about this as well as I can, so if there's ever anything that we come across that you have a thought on, maybe I haven't come across yet, please feel free to jump in here, share your experience with writing, because many of us as writers, it's kind of like we are on this long, long journey of being beginners, and I think as writers we always feel like beginners, and then we can sometimes look back at our older stuff and see maybe we have improved in the skill and craft of writing, but so thanks for coming and joining us. Just an overview of how we're going to try to spend our time today. We're going to talk about the question of why write, especially why write Christian material. I think there are good reasons we're going to talk about why. And then we're going to talk about defining our audience and how people ask me sometimes, can a self-published author, and many of you in here may be published, but can a self-published author, I'm a self-published author, have success? And that's a big question. And so we're going, I think a lot of that has to do with defining our audience. And so that's what we're going to talk about there. We're going to talk a little bit about resources and tools when writing a book. And that's where I'm going to invite you guys to throw in the ones that you've come across when writing either on your blog or on with your book or with your essays, whatever you like to write. I'm going to talk for just a few minutes about publishing a book. And then at the end, I'm going to spend a good bit of time on marketing. And within marketing, we're going to talk about advertising, credibility, and social authority. So, to start off, why write a Christian book? And this is rhetorical, actually. I just want you to think about it for 10 to 15 seconds for you. Not for the right answer or not an answer for everybody, but for you. Why write Christian material? I wrote a book. My name is Zach. I wrote a book called Prisoners in the Bible, and each chapter is about a person in the Bible who was in prison. And it's actually the target audience is people who are currently incarcerated. And so if you read my book, you will see that I'm talking to you, the reader, with the assumption that you are physically in prison right now. And not even in a metaphorical sense, but in a literal sense. The reader is intended to be someone who is in jail or prison long term. And the reason I wrote that is it came out of personal experience. I have three older brothers, and one of them who spent 3 years in prison, starting in late 2008 and getting out some time in 2011. That was an incredible hardship on me, not just on me personally, but also seeing the effect that it had on my parents and knowing and kind of even feeling my own pain, but also feeling their pain at the same time and seeing, you know, I wasn't even a parent at the time, but seeing how hard it must be to be a parent, to have a child, no matter how old, in prison. And, you know, when someone goes to prison, it never affects just them. You know, it affects so many other people. And so I wrote this, I got to thinking, my mother-in-law actually sent my brother a note in prison, and she sent me a copy of what she said. And in the note, she talked about Joseph's prison experience from Genesis a little bit. And that's when I was reading that, I kind of got to thinking, you know, there is a lot of overlap there. And then I got to thinking about what other people in the Bible were in prison, and just off of the top of my head, I could name a good handful, and then the more you got to thinking about it and researching it, it's a pretty common theme. And then I thought, well, off the top of my head, it seems like a lot of times people in the Bible are just in prison for doing good, and maybe today's inmates wouldn't be able to relate to that, but there are a lot of people in the Bible who are in prison for doing good. But there's also a lot of people in the Bible who are in prison because they did some really bad stuff and sometimes unspeakable things. I'm thinking of Manasseh and a lot of times these inmates today can relate to that. And so Prisoners in the Bible came out probably 4 or 5 years ago, and right now what I'm kind of decided to focus my attention on as far as my next writing project is doing an updated edition of Prisoners in the Bible. I'm going to add 4 or 5 new chapters, and then I'm going to rewrite the whole thing, because sometimes, I don't know if you guys have the same experience, you look back at something you wrote 4 or 5 years ago, and you cringe a little bit, and some of it's actually, you think, hey, that's better writing than I remember ever being able to write, and then some of it you're thinking, oh man, this is out there, and it's not even the points, but sometimes it's just the writing, and I actually have a copy of my book that I make notes in, and sometimes in the paragraphs next to it, it just says blah, or boring, you know, and things I've learned since then I'm trying to make marks on, and so gotta look at that type of stuff. So, why write a Christian book? Some of us were just talking about this book by Stephen King called On Writing, and this is for fiction writers. How many of you have read this book, or read parts of it, On Writing by Stephen King? And one thing Stephen King says in here that I think relates to Christian writing, and not a lot of what he says, you know, is for nonfiction at all, but something he says is that, and I'm quoting now, you always hear people say things like this: it was so scary, it was so funny, it was so terrifying, it was so fill-in-the-blank, I just can't describe it. And we tell stories like that. We say, oh man, that talk last night, you know, the other day, was so good, I just can't describe it. You know, you just had to be there. And that's fine for most people to be able to say. But what Stephen King says is that, as a writer, you have to be able to describe it, and you have to be able to describe it in a way that will make your readers tingle in recognition. And he says, if you can do that, you will be rewarded for your efforts, and deservedly so. And so, thinking about how that's for fiction writers, but think about how that relates to Christian writers. We as Christian followers and Christian readers and Christian listeners, there are always things about our faith that we have a feeling in our heart that even those of us who are Christian writers can't find the words to articulate. And then we read other writers or listen to other people who articulate something, and we have that moment where we say, that's what I've felt, but I've never been able to put it into words. To me, that's one of the major reasons why Christian writing is necessary. Here's a few examples of people who have done that well. C.S. Lewis is someone I hear people bring up in this conversation a lot about, you know, people say he takes what I've always felt and puts it into words so clearly and so simply. And so this, for me, is one of those instances where C.S. Lewis did that when he said, Christianity, if false, is of no importance, and if true, is of utmost importance. The one thing it cannot be is moderately important. And we talk about nominal Christianity in churches today, people who are just this Christian commitment in name only. And I think C.S. Lewis sums this up so well. Our faith can't be moderately important, because that's not what Jesus calls anyone to. Another C.S. Lewis one, this is something that I relate to in my personal life, that his writing summarizes so well. A pleasure is not full grown until it is remembered. The pleasure we get from being at the Pepperdine Bible Lectures will not be full grown until later on we are looking back at it and realizing that was a meaningful moment in my life. Because usually we don't realize the meaningful moments until we're looking back on them and think about that. So C.S. Lewis did a nice job of describing that. Donald Miller, I thought he said this really well in his book Scary Close. He said, those who can't accept their own imperfections can't accept grace either. I love that, because if we are accepting, or if my imperfections are this high, which they are, but I only acknowledge this much of my imperfection, then this is how much grace I can really accept into my life. And Donald Miller summarizes that so much. And not that more grace is available, but this is just how much I'm incorporating into my life when I really need this much grace coming into my life. So, that's a little bit about why write. Anyone else have any thoughts about why write Christian material? Yes, please.
I started writing children's material.
Yeah.
And because I was reading to my kids when they were smaller, and I'm thinking, I can do better than that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as far as bringing God's...
Sure.
So I started writing arch books for Concordia, the children's books in Rhine.
Oh, cool.
And that's why I started writing, because I wanted to be able to teach God's truths as I saw them.
Yeah. And have you kept doing that? Do you still write children's books?
I wrote for a place in Cleveland I'm from Ohio, for about 20 years, with children's stories and articles and stuff like that. The children's books, I had two published by Concordia for the arch books, and I was under contract for two more when they changed their criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Because arch books are used so much in classrooms,
okay.
I started looking at them as classroom material.
Yeah.
And in order to write curriculum for them, you have to be Lutheran, and I didn't want to convert.
Yeah.
So I don't do that, but I have another children's book I'm getting ready to send in with Bible stories. And
cool. So what's the title of one of your books that's available?
Abraham's Big Test.
Okay, Abraham's Big Test. Mm-hmm. Well, very neat. And and thank you for sharing about the why behind why you wanted to write that. Yes, sir.
I think there's an audience.
An audience.
People want to read.
Yes.
And people who would never read the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will read what you write.
Yeah, there's a need for it. There's a need for it. Yes, please.
I started teaching women's Bible classes, adult Bible classes, and I found that first when I started, they were doing a book of the Bible a week, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And the only way I could make sense of it was to start writing what I call mini commentaries.
Okay.
But we found that the material for women, it just was kind of fluff.
Yeah.
And the women wanted more, and they found out how smart they were.
Yeah.
And so I continued to write for that. And they wanted more. And some of it's just what's out there is, it's kind of like she said, for kids, but for adults.
Yeah. So you saw fluff, and you decided that you wanted to dig deeper into this.
And when I did, and I think one of the things, too, is that when you write, you teach yourself.
Yes.
And then I wanted more, and it takes me down this rabbit hole. Oh, there's this.
Yeah.
You know, this one.
Yeah.
And then they found out how smart they were,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted more.
Sure.
And they wouldn't go back the other way.
Definitely. Definitely. And something on that, as a side note, I always say, Ty, if you ever have a publishing contract or anything, I've read well-known authors say that nothing takes away the joy of writing than the pressure to do so. And so if you have that, if you sign the contract or whatever, and things are due in November, don't push off until September, because writing should be an enjoyment for us, and for all of us who have this desire to write deep within, let's not rob ourselves of that joy. Yeah, Gilbert.
I've never written a book.
Yeah.
Had ideas to do so, and if I'm being really honest about why, there's some selfishness to it.
Sure.
Writing it for my own self and for maybe a little bit of like just the idea of doing it. Sounds good. But then there's also some, I think it's therapeutic. There's things that I am going through, working through, and writing those things out is a way of kind of therapy. So to speak, and then if others enjoy that, and I think there are a lot of authors that do it for that reason. That's
and articulating our faith or anything going on in our personal lives, I think, is a very healthy outlet for what's going on. And then also, it's I think it's great and healthy to take pride in what we put out there, whether it's through a blog or through a book. And when we do, I think that pushes us to rewrite the material, make sure the material is good. Take a healthy sense of pride in what we're doing. So, Alan,
I hear what you have to say. So I don't want to make this very long, but I think it's also a gift, because Peter said we can't help but speak, and I find myself I can't help but speak, but I don't have a compulsion to write. I mean, sometimes, kind of like Gilbert, I feel like, wow, maybe I can write about this, and maybe I have this voice, but I don't feel that compulsion. So then, for some of us, it's just not that gift. But I think for some of the rest of you, it's there's a compulsion and it's yeah. moving in the spirit that you can't help
yeah.
but write.
Yeah, if something is burning within you, you got to do it. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Bob, let's do one more.
Writing makes me think more carefully.
Yes.
Speaking does not necessarily do
that. I follow this person on Twitter who just retweets things about writing. That's all it is. It's quotes about writing. And one thing one of these famous authors or well-known authors says is that when you write, you can actually be smarter than you really are because you get a chance to rewrite it and to look at it. And, you know, when we speak, we're just kind of, you know, I hope this comes out well. That's how I feel when I preach. Like, I hope this goes okay. I don't say anything. Okay, so let's talk about defining our audience for a little bit. Talking about the question of, can a self-published author have success? I'm proud of my book in the sense of not that it's sold a ton and ton of copies. I'm proud of the number of copies that it has sold, but what I'm more proud of is that since it's been out for the past 4 or so years, the selling has been consistent. There hasn't been like one high point and then one, you know, down for the rest of the time. There have been times when my book has sold 1 to 2 copies a day pretty consistently on Amazon to people who are looking for material to send to their loved ones who are in prison. And I think a lot of that has to do with defining the audience. Now, I don't want to insult anyone in here, but sometimes when people come into my office from the church where I work back in Overland Park, Kansas, and they have an idea for a book, and they sit down and they say, hey, I want to talk to you about this book I'm wanting to write. And I ask them eventually, okay, who are you thinking are going to be the main readers? Who are the target audience of this? And a lot of times, in fact, this happened just a couple months ago, the individual said, Christians. I think broad, Christian audience is broad. And I think that there's a lot of material we can write, you know, with the Christian audience in mind. But I think that if we can even go within that and find a more specific group within Christians, like what Christians am I going to write this for? You know, some people can write for just Christians. And maybe your topic calls for you to write for just Christians. But maybe God has placed something on your heart that's going to lead you toward a more specific group. So I've just come up, I've only written the first one of these, but here's some more examples of defined book ideas. So with a defined audience, inmate readers, prisoners in the Bible. I'm also going to write someday another book for inmates called Broken Chains, which will be a daily devotional for inmates, so leave in probably for like a month or so of daily devotionals. I thought of this idea, worth living for, why church matters now, and this idea from Philippians 1 where Paul is talking about, I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far, but for your sake I know I'm going to remain in the body. And so Paul is saying, I want to go on, but for you, for the church, I will keep living. We talked a lot about what are we willing to die for, but this is what are we willing to live for. And, you know, there's so many young people, and the target audience of this would be younger people, millennials and younger, who are wondering, does the church have any relevant role in my life? And kind of looking at it from that angle and trying to answer the question of, yes, it does, and here's why. Onward, Paul as an older servant of Jesus, you know, talking about some of the things that what Paul did in life, it's never too late to take up an endeavor. Paul did some of his most meaningful work for the history of Christianity and some of his most influential writings in a part of his life where he didn't think he was going to live much longer, and he could have just decided, you know what, I'm done with all this. You know, but he wrote things and he did things that were so meaningful to people. So the target audience of that would be older Christians. Guide, the Holy Spirit for unspiritual people. I'm probably not going to write that one, actually, because I don't understand the Holy Spirit. But that's just an idea if you want to take it. You can have that one. Going into resources now. I want to mention a few. How to Write a Lot. This is at Fuller Seminary one time. I walked up to one of my professors who had published a lot of stuff. I knew he was a busy guy, had a lot on his schedule, and I said, Rob, how do you find time to write? And this is the book he told me to write down. How to Write a Lot by Paul Silvia. That's Silvia. And what Paul really gets at is not disrupting your family and professional life in order to publish. You don't have to become an absentee mother or father, and you don't have to get fired in order to write books, and you can do these things. And he argues that if you find 4 hours a week to write, he says, you will be amazed at how much you can write. And he includes in that all the stuff that goes into working on writing, the research and everything, the rewriting, all that. He says, devote 4 hours like it was an appointment to teach somewhere and show up to it, and whether it's two-hour blocks or whatever, but show up and don't miss it because you wouldn't miss another appointment where people were actually expecting you to be there. This is On Writing Well by William Zinsser, and how many of you guys have read On Writing Well? Wonderful. I'm really glad because I'm glad to share it with you, because if you are going to ever read or purchase one book on writing, it would absolutely, I would say, it should be this one. And I treat it kind of like a Bible, and I know that sounds sacrilegious, but and this is why. I've read the whole thing once, but every once in a while, I'll go and get my copy, which has highlights and underlines all over it, and I'll just open it up to a random page, and I will literally kind of dwell on what William Zinsser is saying here. There is so much good stuff in Zinsser's writing. He passed away in 2015, a Christian guy, wrote many books about writing, wrote many books not about writing, but On Writing Well is the book I would say any aspiring author or writer needs to have in order today. In fact, I have one to give away here today, and I'm just going to give it to one of... Yeah, there you go. It makes it easier. So, yeah, exactly. I have other copies for people that are just on Amazon. You have to order them. Okay, let's go through a couple of things here. On Writing Well, here I want to share a few things because William Zinsser, I can't recommend this enough. He says, writing is hard work. A clear sentence is no accident. Very few sentences come out right the first time or even the third time. Remember this in moments of despair. If you find that writing is hard, it's because it is hard. That's good advice there. Okay, here's a few other things. But the first one impacted me the most. I remember this in emails. This might even be more important in emails than it is in books. Yeah. Never trust a pronoun. Yeah. People don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Don't know what I'm talking about if I just, you know, throw out a pronoun out there. I try to go back through my emails, through my writing. Anytime I find a pronoun, even if I did it in the mention of who it was or whatever in the last sentence, I try to replace it with a specific type of word. Fighting clutter is like fighting weeds. The writer's always slightly behind. Yeah. There's so much... William Zinsser says, you know, like how Stephen King said, put your writing away for 3 months and look at it again. William Zinsser says, if you really, you know, look hard at your sentences, you will find a lot of clutter in there, a lot of words that we can get rid of. He says, every word should be doing new work to move to the next word, and every sentence should be doing new work to move to the next sentence. Same with paragraphs. Everything should be pushing something along. We shouldn't be repeating. I love this one. There's not much to say about the period except that most writers don't reach it soon enough. William Zinsser loves the short sentence. I don't know if Paul the Apostle would have agreed with this, at least it was translated into English, his writing, but most writers don't reach it soon enough. Rewriting is the essence of writing well. It's where the game is won or lost. And then also, this one next seems like the obvious one. Reading is visual. And as writers, we have to remember that in our emails and in our books. And here's an example of that. Here, I'm going to go to the next slide. This is a paragraph from my current version of Prisoners in the Bible. It's one of the sections of the book that I'm actually more proud of. It's about looking at the lion's den that Daniel was in as a metaphor for our own life. And I like the writing. I like what I've done there. But reading is visual. So if I'm a reader and I'm looking at this paragraph, I'm thinking, that's a lot of stuff. And so in the updated version, I'm thinking it's going to look something more like this. Now, that's a simple change, but it's more manageable. And also, some of the sentences I'm more proud of are what people, I want inmate readers to draw their attention to, are now the first sentences of the few paragraphs I split it into. And so that's important. Don't hide some of your most important points in the middle of a paragraph. and make sure nobody can find it. Because sometimes when I look through, if I get an email and it's just one paragraph this long, I'm, oh man.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's the same material, but broken into four paragraphs, I can do that. You know, I can read this. And so yeah, I mean, reading is visual. We have to remember that. I want to mention Evernote. Who uses Evernote as a tool for writing? Yeah, so Evernote's a great tool. Here's what we can do with Evernote. It has the elephant on it, you can see here. And the elephant is the logo because Evernote remembers everything, and that's kind of the idea with Evernote. You open up your iPad, and you make a note on your iPad, and actually what you do first when you're writing a book is you have the option of creating a new notebook. And you go into your Evernote, Evernote's free, and for that notebook, let's say I'm writing Broken Chains, and which I have right now, a notebook for Broken Chains. It's going to be 31 daily devotionals for inmates. And I have like 40 notes within that notebook. So obviously they're not all going to make it into the book. But when I have a thought, I have all the ideas planned out. So if I'm going throughout my day, or I'm going to another lecture here, and I hear something that a year from now I might want to plug into this one daily devotional in Broken Chains, I could just open up Evernote on my phone, on my iPad, on my laptop, wherever you are on your account, I can go into that notebook, find that particular note in the Broken Chains book, open it up, type one sentence, and then go on with the rest of my life. And Evernote remembers it for you, which is so important, because if you keep moving on with your day or go to sleep or take a nap or something, you're going to forget the idea, Gilbert.
Is that the same thing as OneNote? I use OneNote.
It's different stuff.
Is it different stuff?
Yeah, different. I'm actually not as familiar with it.
OneNote was the same thing. I have it on all my different platforms, and I just go in and have tabs and I'm right there.
Yeah. OneNote might be just as good. So, another thing about Evernote is, how many of you are familiar with the late comedian Mitch Hedberg? Ever listened to Mitch Hedberg? He said one time, when he was laying in bed at night, if he thought of something funny, he had to either get up and find a pen and a piece of paper or convince himself that what he thought of is not actually funny. And so, and sometimes that's how we are. We're laying in bed and we get this thought. And if I ever have a thought in bed right before I go to sleep and I don't write it down, it's just gone. But Evernote can be a great tool for that, because you can even just write a reminder. Hey, tomorrow, flesh out this idea a little bit more and just write down the sentence, and then later on you have, or if you're standing in the grocery store line, Evernote is a great help for that. Mike Cope, this is what he said about Evernote. I preached before Evernote, but now I don't know how I did. And preaching works great with Evernote too. Canva is a great resource for, especially for the self-published writers. You don't need to always pay someone $2,000 to make a book cover for you, because in this age, there are so many resources out there, even for people who are not graphic artists, to be able to do their own things online. Canva is great for all types of graphic design stuff, for people who don't know anything about graphic design. And so the other day, this is Gilbert back here. He's our preaching minister at the church where I work. And he had a series recently called Whatever, and it was on the book of Philippians, Paul's letter to the church in Philippi. And I said, Gilbert, I like the hook of that series. I think you should think about writing some of that down and making a book of it. We talked about it. And then as a joke, I spent probably 3 minutes on Canva making this, just to show him, you know, kind of push him. I emailed it to him to push him toward this idea. Whatever, following Jesus. I made the subtitle. I was pretty proud of it. Following Jesus, whatever that means. Gilbert Carrington. And I left in this 1 million copies. That was already on there. And, you know, but that's 3 minutes. I didn't even spend time finding the most appropriate, you know, template. And you can go in there, you can change the photos and everything. Yes, please.
Are they copyrighted?
So you're allowed to, when you download it, Canva has, like, certain rules. Like, you can sell, like, up to 15,000 copies without ever having to buy a new license for it or something. And you'd have to look into what the exact numbers of that.
That's cool.
But you're allowed, it's all these free resources. But then what you can do is you can go in and put your own material in there. You can put your own photo. And they have all these different templates laid out. We could move this photo out of here and just drag our own in. I'm writing a book about a certain neighborhood in San Diego, and I found one that had 3 different photos on here, and so I dragged those photos out, put my own pictures in of La Jolla, and that's going to be the book cover someday, in like 30 years when I finish it. And so self-publishing options. Let's. How many of you have heard of Westbow Press? It's a popular one to self-publish through. A lot of times people go through Westbow Press. Here are some things about Westbow Press I just want to caution. My current book is through Westbow Press, Prisoners in the Bible, but next time I'm actually going to go to Amazon for the updated version, and I'm going to tell you why. Publishing packages with Westbow range from 2,000 to 10,000 with a third zero on there. And so they set the price of the book that sellers have to pay on Amazon, and it's actually kind of high. My book right now is $13.95 retail, $12.40 is what Amazon has set it at. I can't control that. And I think that's a little bit too high for a lot of families who want to send something to their loved one in prison. And so when the next edition comes out, I'm going to be able to make it less expensive on Amazon, way less expensive, while still making more royalties per sale when someone buys the book. They promote high royalties, 50%, and that's true, but the payoff is only when customers order through Westbow's website, which basically never happens, because I think maybe my mother-in-law bought a few through Westbow's website to be nice to me, so you know I could get them. But no one goes to Westbow's website and orders those. So when they buy them through Amazon, I get $1, but I'd get $4 if they bought through Westbow's website. And it's going to be, when I publish through Amazon, it's going to be more reversed. Formatting and editing costs extra. They want to sell you promotional products that rarely pay off. They wanted to sell me an expensive package that puts my book on a conference table in St. Louis where this conference was going on. I added it up. I could have traveled to St. Louis. Granted, I'm in Kansas City. I could have paid for the hotel room, spent the time out there for way less than paying, and had my own table with just my book than just having the one book on there. And they put they're part of a larger self-publishing company called Author Solutions. Author Solutions has many different outlets for self-publishing authors. Westbow is their Christian outlet. So it's not a few people who got together and said, hey, we really need to help Christian authors. Westbow Press is part of a larger company that they're in it to make money. They do good stuff. There are some advantages to having it. They do good cover work. They do other good things. And it's a nice outlet if you don't want to take the time to do the formatting and stuff yourself. Here's another option, though. Amazon offers CreateSpace, which is the print copy edition, and Kindle Direct Publishing, which is the electronic edition, for free. And they will sync the two on Amazon. And so it's a free service. You do more of the work. You do more of the formatting. You find the cover either on Canva or you pay someone to do it. You control the price of the book. You set it on there, and you set the price and everything. Higher royalties because many people buy through Amazon. You can still get your book into bookstores because the book is available through Ingram, which is what bookstore manager is going to ask you. Ingram is the distribution company. If it's not available through Ingram, then a lot of bookstores aren't going to be able to do a signing or anything like that because they can't order your book. You can buy your own ISBN number for like $10 and create your own publishing name. My future books are going to be under Broken Chains Publishing. But if you don't buy your own ISBN for $10, they'll just list it as Amazon CreateSpace as the publisher. You can hire freelancers to create your cover or use Canva. So going through this quickly.
Exactly.
Yes, Dan.
If you go back and finish, she's going to take a picture.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
I use CreateSpace for my book that's done in the bookstore now.
Oh, wonderful. What's the title of the book?
Paper Peggy, a delightful companion for 101-year-old Juanita.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's cool.
And it's not as frivolous as it sounds.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm going to go thumb through that. Yeah, thank you for sure. Yeah, CreateSpace is a good tool. All right, so now we're going to talk about advertising, credibility, and social authority. This is the last section of our class. In my experience, and not just from my experience, but what I've read other writers talk about online, is that you can pay for as many people as you want to pay to see your book in some advertising format, whether it's on Facebook, Google, whatever you want to pay for. But if you are not finding a way to advertise to the people in that target, that niche audience that we talked about, most people will see the advertisement and scroll past, and you're still paying a bit for that. Many people will click on it. You're paying more for that. Very, very, very few will buy it. And so that's been my experience. That's what I've read about. You can pay as much money as you want for it. You can pay for 1 million people to see your book. Only a few would buy it out of 1 million. That would cost a lot of money, way more than you would get back in return. So I've found an outlet, Prison Legal News. I paid, this goes to families and people in prison. I did have a spike. And my sales have been pretty consistent. And when I advertised for 2 months straight in Prison Legal News, my sales rank on Amazon was the best it's ever been. And sales were going more consistently because that I found a way to reach my target audience. And that was through this publication called Prison Legal News. This also comes down to social authority, which we'll talk about in a second. Guest posts. You can do a guest post on a blog that attracts readers from your target audience. You know, what blogs are doing really well that your readers are reading, then go to the guest post, and then in the little description, you know, this is so-and-so wrote this, they're the author of this book, then click on it and go to Amazon. One of the other effective ways I found to sell my book is to, I hitched my book, Prisoners in the Bible, onto the train of Chicken Soup for the Prisoner's Soul. And Chicken Soup for the Prisoner's Soul sells really well every day. Right now, last night, this was the sales rank of Chicken Soup for the Prisoner's Soul. 15,710. Usually when I check it, it's around 8,000. And that is, the lower the better. And so, like, number one is, you know, usually, you know, Harry Potter or something like that. But the lower the better. That was last night. The best my book has ever been has been in the 17,000. But usually my book, it usually ranges from 60 to like 250,000 on any given day. But out of all the books in the whole world, 15,710 is very good. And it's usually a good bit lower than this. And so what I did was, when my book first came out, I bought several copies of my book and Chicken Soup for the Prisoner's Soul in the same purchase on Amazon. And then I asked friends. I gave my friends money. And I asked them to use their accounts to buy my book and Chicken Soup for the Prisoner's Soul on Amazon together. Eventually, when you look at a book on Amazon and you see customers who bought this also bought this, I got onto the front page of Chicken Soup for the Prisoner's Soul, and that actually helped my book sell more consistently, because when people are on there looking for something for their loved one, they saw, oh, Prisoners in the Bible, and they checked it out, and they bought it. And so there's a book out there that connects to your book in the same way. And if you're willing to invest some money, it might be more effective than the Facebook, the Google advertising. Okay, now moving on to credibility. William Sensor says, credibility is just as fragile for a writer as it is for a president. And I think that comes true in three ways. In the writing, this is the one that Sensor talks about. If the reader catches you embellishing, catches you stretching things, it's just like speaking. You want to know that I'm authentic. You want to know that the people you're listening to in person are authentic. And so your reader wants to know that they're reading someone who, you know, kind of can relate to you in some way, the reader. And so credibility is just as fragile as a writer as it is for a president. Okay, so there's another type of credibility, and that comes through endorsements. You know, finding the endorsements, you know, not just someone who is a bestseller, but someone in that niche audience. And also, if it's in that niche audience, you're going to be more likely to get the endorsement. Because if you can send the letter, you find the one person who's the connection to this person, and you can tell them, this is why I am specifically thinking of you as an endorsement for this book, then they're more likely to give their time to actually take the time to read your book. Because a lot of people who would be asking for endorsements are busy, and they don't want to read every book that people send their way. And a lot of times you need a connection to get that as well. And if you want to read more about getting endorsements, I would read the chapter on endorsements in Michael Hyatt's book, Platform. And he argues that endorsements are possible. It's just that most people give up on them too soon because it takes a lot of going back and going back. And the other type of credibility is who are you as a writer? This gets into social authority as well. So one thing we can do is we can set up our Amazon author page really well. This is Richard Betts. He's done a great job with his Amazon author page. He has all of his books right here. His most recent one, Reviving Old Scratch, which he talked about last year at the lectures. It's a book on Satan and Unclean, which he's talked a lot about. And then down here, these are posts. These are links to his most recent blog post. He has one of the top 100 Christian blogs in the world. And he's a Church of Christ professor at ACU. And he has all his blog posts down here, a nice bio right here. And people know who he is when they go here. So it's not just somebody, who's just decided to write a book. But he's kind of showing a little bit about who I am to the world. So, who are you buying a book from? Okay, getting into social authority. If any of us were going to repair a major expense on our house and going to have to invest a lot of money into it, I'm guessing that most of us would want to read reviews from actual verifiable customers about the people who are going to do the work on the roof or whatever. We do this in a lot of realms of life. The other day, my wife and I were talking about the possibility of going to see this new movie with Tom Hanks and Emma Watson called The Circle. And, is it worth our time? Is it worth the money it takes to go to a movie? And so we went on to Rotten Tomatoes. Well, it got a 17% of critic approval, and it got 25% of user likes it. I wanted it to be good. The preview looked good and everything, but we just decided not to spend the time and money, which we just... time and money are just something that a lot of us, don't want to sacrifice right now. So we go and look at these. This just wasn't going to be worth the time to go and do that. Disappointing. But then you look at something like La La Land, and it has 93% of critics liked it and 83% of users liked it. And we all do that with these realms in life. It's no different with books. And so what I'm trying to say, oh man, I was going to ask you, what restaurants would you recommend in Malibu? And you were going to say Malibu Seafood. And I was going to show you the Yelp review. 1,811 people, it gets 4 stars. And so we do that. We go and we look, what are other people really saying about this? And so what I want to say about that is talking about those user reviews on Amazon. My book has 50 right now. And for the most part, they're favorable from people who have bought the book, a lot of people I don't know. And what that does is it gives that social authority. When someone is looking for a gift for the loved one in prison or whoever your niche audience is, they say, what have other people thought? They go and read these reviews, and a lot of times it says, Amazon verified purchase. Anyone can write a review, but if you bought the book, it adds that Amazon verified purchase, which is so important. And another thing that I'm not ashamed to do is if a friend of mine comes up and tells me, I liked your book, I ask him, hey, would you write a review about it on Amazon? And that's a good thing, because sometimes you gotta, you don't want to go like emailing everyone on your email list, like, hey, would everyone read my book and then write a review? That can get annoying. But you want to, if someone comes up and tells you they liked your book, would you just write a sentence about that on Amazon? That would be really meaningful to me if you do that. So I'm at 50 right now, and that helps when people click on that and see, hey, this book, 50 people, actual people, wrote about this. So, any thoughts or anything before we close? Any resource or anything like that I didn't mention that we should throw out there? Yes, Kevin.
I used Smashwords to self-publish my book.
Okay, so what was that like?
It has its own website, so people can buy the book through it, but it also links with Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble, and a host of other companies around the world, in the U.S. and around the world. Not that I've gotten a whole lot of exposure, but it's out there, on a lot of different websites.
Another one to check out, definitely. Yes.
I have a friend that her husband did deer hunting for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted to write a book about good deer hunting, and he ended up turning it into a novel, which was really, really good. He used a self-publisher, and it was really expensive, and he got very little support at all.
Yeah.
And it discouraged him from ever writing again.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, because he really wanted, he set it up if it could have been a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But he just didn't get he was virtually on his own.
Yeah. And a lot of times they'll call and they'll try to sell the products. They basically want to make money off of selling you promotional products that really aren't that effective. And so Dan and I both use that Westville, which I was talking about earlier, and that's they call us both regularly wanting to sell us promotional products. And one of the most recent calls was I got a voicemail from them saying, "Hey," the person saying, "I don't know if you still care about your book or not, but you know." And then when I got them on the phone, I'm telling them, "Well, I do care, and this is the things I'm doing, and all that stuff."
So, how do you know who to avoid and how to sort through?
I would just look very carefully at what the upfront cost is, and then also what are they going to do to help you? Do they have any interest on their end in promoting your book, helping you promote your book like a traditional publisher would to some extent? Because you can look through services on their websites, like you can go to Westbo's website and look through services. And if you're seeing all this stuff that you think a publisher ought to have interest in doing just because they published the book, even for their own financial interest, but these are sold products and services, that should be a red flag. Because if it's going to cost this much for them to put it on a table at a conference, they should be doing that anyway, because it's their book. Just like Leafwood has out here at Pepperdine, they have all their books, you know, listing. The publisher should do that. And so if they're going to charge you to do that, that's a red flag, you know. So
you sign a contract with them, or
you still own one thing is that you still
look at something
you that'd probably be advisable, but you still own the rights to the book, which is why I have in writing from Westbo that when I do the new edition through Amazon, you know, there's not going to be any issue with that. The old one will still be there, but I'm going to do this new edition, new cover, all that stuff. And so it's your material. Now, that's through Westville. I don't know about the contracts with others. So.
I have another question. I wrote a series of preschool, it was preschool through elementary, public curriculum on life skills.
Yeah.
And it came with five books and coloring book, and it has blocked out plays and all this stuff, and nursery schools and elementary were using it.
Yeah.
An honors project when I was graduating from University of Arizona, and I never copyrighted it. I didn't do any of that. And you said something about getting your own ISBN number and all of that.
Yeah, and also I would, you know, on the copyright, so are they selling it now?
No.
Okay.
No, it's free for it's in the special sections of the library.
Yeah.
I allowed the local schools to use it.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. For one thing, I just wanted to be done with what I was doing.
Yeah.
But it's just sitting there, and it's been sitting there for a while, since 1992.
Well, what I would do before you even talk to a copyright attorney is I would just go and do some good Googling about copyright stuff. And, you know, I bet there's people who have been in this exact same position and would be able to write about or respond to something you ask. Because, frankly, I don't know about the copyright stuff very much about that. But if anyone else knows after class, they can certainly do it. Gilbert?
This is a question you may not have a good answer for, but there's obviously more to this than just I think it'd be great to write a book, just to write a book and all this stuff. What's becoming clear, and I kind of knew this already, but there could be a financial commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you give a ballpark kind of guesstimate to what someone who wants to self-publish a book, what they're going to be looking at financially up front, that they're going to put into that?
If you go through a paid service like Westbo of thousands, and that's going to be really hard for a self-published author to get back. If you go through Amazon, you can pay a lot less. I mean, you can do it for free, the publishing part of it, and then the cost would come with either paying someone to do your cover, paying someone to format the interior of the book, or advertising, but you can find the creative ways to do that as well, and like writing a blog post for somebody and everything. So one more thought.
Why didn't you use a publishing company?
A traditional publisher?
Yeah.
There were some publishers who were interested, and I ended up winning a package through Westbo and had a little bit more control over the material, a little bit more control over the writing, and there's times when I regret also not going with the traditional publisher who was interested. And so traditional publishing is definitely a good route. And also, my advice would be not to discount what the editors tell you in the early stages. You know, listen to them. And also, don't respond to your editors when they have a suggestion for at least a day. Give yourself some time to think about what they're saying, and even if you don't like it at first. So, yeah. Hey, thank you guys. I think there's someone who wants to get in here. So, thank you guys. I appreciate your time.